This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, Panther fans? Welcome to another podcast episode of the Four Man Rush. Tonight we got myself, Will, we got Country Kev, JD, and Monty joining us tonight as well. We got some big news this week with the Panthers firing offensive coordinator Joe Brady, so that's going to be the topic of what we talk about today. We'll also dig into a little bit of the Falcons game at the end, but we've already broken down the Falcons in an earlier episode, so we won't spend a lot of time on that. Again, you can go peep that other the older podcast where we broke down the home game we had against Atlanta as well. So let's talk about this offensive coordinator, Joe Brady. I'm going to let y'all do the talking first. Monty, you want to go ahead and start us off? I know you were eager to get your opinion out about this latest move with the offensive coordinator.
To be honest, bro, I mean, I don't have much to say other than I thought it was a good move. I don't think it was a bad move necessarily. You know, I don't think Brady necessarily fit what Rule wanted to do offensively anyway. And I think that kind of made – and then, you know, with us struggling this year and with us not having a lot of great success offensively last year, I think it kind of made it easy to pull the trigger on it. I don't think Joe Brady is necessarily the problem, but also, I mean, I think it's just, you know, a fair split for both parties. You know, I think – Rule needs to find an offensive coordinator that he truly believes can get the best out of his quarterbacks and best out of this offense in general. And Joe Brady wasn't that guy, you know, clearly wasn't that guy. And I also feel like, you know, you aren't going to gamble your career if you're Matt Rule on Joe Brady, in my opinion. You know, I feel like it was a gamble to begin with to bring him in. And now – I believe that seat in Carolina is getting very hot, and you're not going to gamble your career on Joe Brady. You know, and at least if you're Matt Rule, you're gambling. Like, I mean, you saw he promoted one of his best friends. At least if you going out smoking with the guys that you've already had success with in the past. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that's the best way either, just to be honest. You know, I think you should, especially with the offense that we have, the pieces that we have, you have to go get a guy that knows how, you know, you need to go get an offensive mind that knows how to use the pieces that you have. But I also understand the decision. I wish the best for Joe Brady. You know, like I said, I don't think he was the biggest problem here, but also I don't think he's not a great offensive coordinator, in my opinion, at least not right now. He's not, you know, in the NFL. And I think that just comes with time and experience to develop your craft. And, you know, we're talking about a second year offensive coordinator in the NFL. So, you know, I just think that it was a good move for both parties.
Now, Kev, you look at what Matt Rule and Scott Fitterer gave Joe Brady to work with. You know, they traded for Sam Darnold, you know, arguably, clearly not a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think we all agree with that. Arguably the worst bottom five offensive line in the league. We don't really have a tight end that's, you know, a threat that the defense has to respect. Do you think Joe Brady's more of a scapegoat, or do you think this was justified here?
Me personally, I think that this was a scapegoat move with the firing of Joe Brady. When you look at Joe Brady's background, you know, what was he at LSU? He wasn't the offense coordinator. He was the passing game coordinator. So passing was his thing. So, you know, with Matt Rule making this sudden change of philosophy, you know, to quote unquote want to run the ball more, well, you have a guy who never called plays like that to an extent, who primarily specialized in passing. So, you know, now that, you know, you have a change of philosophy because your ways and your decisions have not yielded the results that you wanted, let's call it for what it is. We got a bottom five offensive line. You know, that could be, you know, where it kind of pass blocking or run blocking, according to the ESPN pass block win rate or run block win rate. Either one, where, you know, the best that we are right now is we're 25th best and run blocking, which is kind of a step up because we was like 31st at one point, you know. But at the end of the day, I just think that Joe Brady was the scapegoat because Matt Rhule wanted to change philosophies after the I'm trying to think what loss it was, and we went to New York and we wanted to quote run the ball more, and then we only ran like 17 times. I think that was kind of the beginning of the end, you know, when we only scored 3 points in New York. Now, mind you, you couldn't call run plays as often as you like. We can call 30, 35 run plays a game. Is this offensive line going to allow whoever called to run the ball to be able to be in a position where they can gain significant yardage? You know, teams are already stacking the box against us because we haven't established ourselves as a dominant, vertical, deep threat passing attack team by any stretch. So we're basically going to just be encouraging teams to keep loading up the box on us until we show that we're able to be able to, you know, win downfield, win, you know, vertical jump balls and make big plays of 20 yards or more. So, you know, I get why Matt Rhule did what he had to do. You know, looking at it, the fit to be more, you know, run base versus pass base. But at the end of the day, I think that the bigger issue has been Matt Rhule's philosophies, Matt Rhule's, you know, decisions, the type of personnel, because at the end of the day, he's head coach, but he's also the de facto GM because all final personnel moves are what, you know, he gets the final say. So at the end of the day, I just think that this was a scapegoat move, but it is also, you know, the right move because Joe Brady just didn't have a history of being someone that not only called plays in general, but being able to feature the running game more in the way that at Matt Rhule wanted.
Now, JD, what's your thoughts? I mean, do you think, what was the bigger problem with the offense? Was it Joe Brady and his play calling and his schemes? Or do you think it was having a quarterback like Sam Darnold, like PJ Walker, and, you know, this offensive line that just can't consistently have, you know, consistently play well?
I honestly believe we have a talent issue on offense, especially in the trenches, especially for the quarterback position, as we've seen in the past. How I view this situation, it would have taken an act from God for Joe Brady to still be a coordinator here. First OC job, you don't get – let's go all the way back. You don't get a preseason. Well, you get an abbreviated preseason. You don't get a training camp. You bring in Teddy Bridgewater because he at least has some idea of what your scheme was with the Saints. And maybe he'll help you bridge some of that gap for the training camp you missed. But you have you have two new starting guards on your O-line. Left tackle is a stopgap, as always. Russell Okung is there sometimes. Sometimes he's not. You got Greg Little finding out he's trash. You don't give him any chance to get any continuity on the offense as far as offensive personnel. It's weird because from the first year he was there, you'd be hard pressed to tell me one person that improved. Which player on offense improved? From first year to now, it's not an easy question to answer because I honestly believe it's a talent issue. Every single player on the offense that is not hurt or injured is taking a step back, and I don't think that's a scheme issue. I think that's either a talent or development issue, and that's gonna have to fall back on Rhule. But it was a tough slate. I don't think he deserved to be fired. But I think it was pretty clear that Rhule has no issues with nepotism, and this was the only coordinator spot that did not have some touch or feel of nepotism to it because he didn't work with Rhule before this. So I don't know if somebody else in the building referred or prefer Joe Brady over Matt Rule's guy. But if there was going to be a scapegoat from the jump, like our guys at Panther Nation Podcast and Dave said, it was going to be Joe Brady, straight up.
Now, Monty, last year we had four players with 1,000 scrimmage yards. Mike Davis, Curtis Samuel, Robbie Anderson had a career year under big two-year contract, and DJ Moore pretty much established himself as a top, you know, top 20, top 15 wide receiver in this league. But this year we just haven't seen that kind of production from our skill players. And we added Terrace Marshall, replaced Curtis Samuel. We all were high on him coming out of the draft. He had an incredible preseason. He's been a non-factor. You know, we had Dan Arnold coming into the year. He was a non-factor and got traded. What do you think is holding the skill players back this year? You think it's more about Joe Brady, or was it the downgraded quarterback more so?
Well, to be honest, I'm going to address JD first. He's my dog. I don't think that it's fair to say that none of the talent, you know, none of our talent has gotten better from a year. From year one to year two. I think that if we're going to address or talk about the offense, let's talk about the offense as a whole. You know, we're talking, like, last year we didn't have, I mean, our tight end one is a rookie this year. That wasn't the case last year. You know, our wide receiver three is a rookie this year, where that wasn't the case last year. And then when you add in the case that you gamble on Sam Darnold, to be fair, Joe Brady probably was dealt a very crap hand. Like, I mean, I don't think Joe Brady was the full problem with the offense. I think I think a lot of what we're all saying is true. I think it was just a big mix of it all. You know, I think they gambled on the wrong quarterback and was wrong. I don't know if Joe Brady's, you know, I mean, because if I don't think Joe Brady's offense is meant for the NFL, yo. I mean, if we're just gonna keep it being like his offense. Like Kev said, bro, he wasn't the full-time offensive coordinator at LSU. He was a passing down like coordinator. And even at LSU, like, he didn't feature the tight end often at much at all. And like, and y'all tell me what offense is thriving in the NFL that doesn't feature the tight end. You know, so I mean, these are things I feel like that we just don't look at and consider. I mean, and then like I said, to address what JD said with the talent, like, DJ Moore isn't having the year that we all thought he would have. Same with Brian Burns. Like, I feel like we have to be real. We have to look at what's actually going on. DJ Moore is not having the top 15, top 10 year that we all thought he would have. Bro, he's still on pace for a career year. Like, make no mistake about it. Depending on how these last five games play out, we still talk about a 1,200-plus, five-touchdown year. So, I mean, let's not lose sight of that. Brian Burns. Brian Burns is still on pace for a 10-plus sack season. You know what I'm saying? So again, they just not having the year that we all expected them to have. So let's address that for one. Who's to blame for the offense? It's hard to say who's to blame, man, because we're just bad in so many different areas. Like, starting with the offensive line. Like, the offensive line is the fuck terrible. Like, and that's putting it lightly. Like, we're terrible on, like, up front. So that, and I feel like shit trickles downward. That, like, when your offensive line is bad, bro, your offense is bad. Like, or very rarely is your offense good with a crap offensive line. And then you add a crap quarterback with a crap offensive line in, bro, that you just shot yourself in the foot twice. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I feel like that's the start. So again, it's not all Joe Brady's fault. But Joe Brady is. But when we're talking about situational football, Joe Brady is not great in situation. Like, when late two minute offense, we're putrid when it comes to 2 minute offense. Like that's just what it is. Like, even with Joe Brady, has yet to prove that we can run the ball effectively. And now, mind you, the offensive line is trash this year. The offensive line wasn't that bad that last year, and we still couldn't run the ball. And again, I hear all the 4,000 yard players, but That's like an asterisk to how, bro, we were still middle of the pack last year with 4,000 yard players. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, I think all of that plays a part in why you have to let Joe Brady go. I mean, again, it's not fair, but this is the business part of it. And again, as much as he was dealt the crap hand, Joe Brady wasn't great with the crap hand that he was dealt either. You know what I'm saying? And again, it's not fair, but when gambling your career, Matt Rhule, on who's going to save my job or who's going to help me save my job, dog, you're not doing that with Joe Brady. You just not. You know what I'm saying? I question how do we get here anyway? How do we get here as a first year head coach and you gamble on an offensive coordinator that's never been in the NFL and a defensive coordinator that's never coached full, he's never been a full-time defensive coordinator in the NFL. Like, how this to me, that's the bigger question. Like, is Joe Brady, yeah, he was dealt a shit hand, but how do we get here to begin with? You know what I'm saying? Year two, and we're already looking for another offensive coordinator and might be looking for another head coach. So, you know, it's more than just Joe Brady. We're just bad in a lot of different areas, man.
Okay, we hear Matt Rhule talk about he wants to be a team that starts with a powerful run game. And, you know, coaches just say stuff. They have philosophies in the back of their head, what they want to do. When you look at what has he done offensive line-wise to allow this team to be a powerful run game, let's kind of just refresh our memory on how this current offensive line was built. You know, Matt Paradis had, I think he had an option on his contract. They picked it up, so he – you know, comes into the final year of his contract. First day of free agency, they signed Cam Irving to, I think, a two-year deal. They signed Pat Elflein to a two-year deal to come in and be the starting left tackle and left guard. Taylor Moten, they signed him to an extension this offseason, so he's going to be the right tackle for a long time. They brought John Miller back on a one-year deal. He's pretty much been the starting right guard. When he's healthy, you had rotational guys like Dennis Daly, Trent Scott, they've come in, you know, started in spots. Then you went to the draft. You know, you had a first-round pick. You had the opportunity to take Rashawn Slater. You had an opportunity to trade back and take Christian Darrisaw, who I believe is starting in Minnesota right now. Passed on the left tackle, went secondary. I mean, I'm okay with that. Then now you get to the second round. You got guys like Jackson Carman, Creed Humphrey, you know, Trey Smith, who was picked a little bit later. You know, and all these opportunities to build your offensive line through the draft, yet they elect to trade back multiple times. We take a wide receiver in the second round, take Brady Christensen, who's, I think he'll be a good player one day, but he was, oh, we all know he was a developmental prospect coming out. And then they get Deontay Brown in the sixth round, who's another kind of project developmental player who's just not seeing the field this year. But when you look at these offensive line moves, do you find it contradictory that he wants to be a power run team, but one, he's not building the offensive line to allow him to do that?
Well, for me, you know, being a trench guy that I am, this, you know, you're asking guys who are set up more comfortably to be zone blocking guys to now all of a sudden become a power run. Power run team, just not a good look. That's like, you know, expecting a Hyundai engine to work in a BMW. It may be an engine, but it ain't a good match. You know what I'm saying? You know, because first of all, whenever you want to be a power running team, you know, you the type of linemen that you need are guys that are physically aggressive and have good technique with leverage. It's not all about being big and strong. You know, make sure you got established good leverage and good spacing is one of the primary keys into setting up effective blocking for a power run team, because typically what it entails is combination blocks on the defensive tackles and then sliding up to the next level to the linebackers you know, with a lot of power run schemes. You do have some trap blocking, you know, where you're pulling and things of that nature. You can pull play side, you can pull backside. We just don't have the type of personnel to really allow this philosophy that Matt Rhule wants to use to be something that's going to sustain. Now, we may have some success with it. Like I said, I expect our team to come out, you know, with their hair on fire this coming Sunday, home against Atlanta. I've been felt that the bye week would give us a chance to catch our breath, you know, with the different, you know, injuries and things going on, being placed on COVID protocols. There's a possibility that Deontay Brown, who, you know, defines, you know, what we're looking at when it comes to power run blocking. You know, that's a start, you know. But just as far as the personnel, what Matt Rhule wants versus the type of personnel to execute what he wants, it's not a good fit right now. This is something that has to be addressed. Now, the cool part is, if this is the route that he wants to go, the free agents that are going to be available for his offensive linemen that do this very well, they're going to be available. This upcoming NFL draft, I was in love with the linemen last year, but oh my God, what was getting ready to come down the pike through the NFL draft this year is like, you know, if you're looking to reestablish the trenches, particularly on the offensive line side, this is going to be the upcoming draft. But at this point in time, unfortunately, all we got now is a first and a bunch of day three picks, you know, where things stand. So, you know, an opportunity once again, back-to-back years to finally address this offensive line properly. We're not going to really be able to really cash in on the presently constructed. But just from philosophy scheme-wise, what he wants versus what they're capable of doing, it's just not a good match right now at this time.
And one more question before I get to JD. Like, one of my complaints about Joe Brady is the lack of diversification in his run game. It's primarily, you know, inside zone plays. He does a little bit of stuff with read option, inside, outside zone. You don't really see, you know, a lot of draws, a lot of, you know, misdirection, a lot of traps, a lot of, you know, counters, things like that. Are we not running these various other run plays, these power run plays, because we don't have the personnel to do it? Or do you think it's a lack of creativity and experience in designing run plays on Joe Brady's part?
I think it's a combination of both. Again, you know, when you look back at, you know, what he did at LSU, you know, now they had was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think he was their running back that year. Now, yeah, he was able to put up, you know, crazy numbers. I mean, when you look at the type of offense they had, you know, they used their passing game to set up their running game success, you know, that they had. You know, once they done, you know, had you chasing and running them around, you know, a lot in the first half, here come in the second half, you know, where the rushing yards start, you know, piling in after they're up, you know, three or four scores. And basically forcing you to be one-dimensional, which allows, you know, their defense to tee off and things of that nature. You know, that type of run blocking is all about X's and O's, but it also is about the having to want to. You know, a guy like Michael Jordan, you know, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, battling a hamstring injury, this would fit his scheme what he did at Ohio State. Deontay Brown, this will fit his scheme what he did at Alabama. Now, Pat Elflein at center, who I think has played significantly better at center than he did at guard, is this something that he could do? I've seen him at center move the pile and move some things out of the way. So potentially our interior possibly could be in position to set that up. Now, the question is going to be at tackle. Taylor Moten, you know, to be our franchise guy, I see Taylor getting nasty every once in a while, but not nothing with any type of regularity, you know, to be the franchise guy that we paid him to be. This will be an area I would love for him to be. Will, I think he shared with us a chart in the Foreman Rush chat that, you know, as far as right tackles go, he's like in the bottom quadrant of the starting 32. Out of 32, he's like in the bottom eight or whatever for, you know, right tackle, you know, execution or whatever. So interior-wise, what we could potentially looking at, the type of players are there. But, you know, if we're trying to bounce and run it outside, off tackle or, you know, toss sweeps or anything outside the numbers, that's where I'm going to be a little bit more concerned with this scheme. So, again, it's going to be a mixed bag. We may see some success here and there, but to truly be, if this is something that he wants to be known for, we got to add players to the talent to have not only the talent, but the mind frame to execute this the way it needs to be done.
JD, we hear Matt Rhule talk about running the ball 30 to 33 times a game. To me, I mean, I hear something like that, and to me, it just sounds like a confused coach who's just not understanding, you know, what's going on in these games. You look at the – like, how can you run the ball 30 to 33 times a game when, one, you're playing from behind, two, you lead the league in penalties, so you're behind the sticks. So why are you going to run the ball on first and 15, second and 13? You know, things like that. You got to have to pass. Those are must-pass situations. So when you get behind like that, like against Miami, we ran the ball 15 times because we were playing from behind and in catch-up mode all game long. So I think that's a factor in why we can't run the ball 30 to 33 times. And two, once CMC got hurt, you got guys like Chuba Hubbard, you know, not really a power runner, guy that's going to break tackles. You know, Amir Abdullah, more of a scat back. So as far as the running backs go, JD, you think we have running backs to really carry that workload, or do we need more of a power guy like Mike Davis back there?
It would be nice to have a Mike Davis on this team. I think where Rhule is kind of confused is I think he wants to be able to or should want to be able to run the ball in the third quarter to where we're not behind in the third quarter and we can kind of just control the clock and get to the fourth quarter, because at this point, third quarter has been ugly. So, it's tough to run the ball when you're behind on the sticks, you're behind on the scoreboard. And then past halftime, you're fighting against the clock. So as far as the running back group, I don't trust per se that these the other two bats can carry the load. Because if we're keeping Christian to that 16 touches a game, or 15 carries, 15, 16 carries a game, that means another guy's going to have to match that. And Chuba has gotten better. I love Amir Abdullah. I'm a huge fan of his ever since Nebraska, but I'm not sure those guys are that guy. I think he's confused as far as what our offensive identity is. And I wouldn't be surprised if that cost him his job down the line, because you have all these dynamic athletes on your offense and we still don't have an offensive identity. And then the best thing you can recommend is running the ball more than 75% of the league. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me that you can have a guy like DJ Moore, who's the most explosive athlete on the field most times he steps on the field, and not have an offensive identity at all. Even if you can't throw the ball, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I don't think we have the personnel on the offensive line or in the running back group or room to kind of take that task on. And look, I don't know. I don't have any idea. I have not the slightest clue on what he was talking about when he wanted to run the ball 30 plus times, and we're already down over 10 most times in the third quarter.
Now, you look at what we got at quarterback, Cam Newton. I mean, in his prime, you know, you're talking about, what, 10, 15 carries. He can run QB power. He can run read options, quarterback scrambles. He was a very productive runner. I mean, he's good for 500 yards, maybe 5 to 8. Touchdowns a season. But Cam's, you know, 32 now. He's lost a lot of weight. He's not the big 265-pound, you know, quarterback that he was in 2011 to 2016. You still want to see Armani, you're probably the biggest Cam fan in the group. You want to see Cam a part of the run game like he was early in his career, or how do you think he should be a part of this Matt Rhule's vision to want to run the ball more?
Yeah, I think that how you want to use Cam is hard to answer that question, because, you know, part of me wants to be like, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know. And I feel like he proved a year ago that he still can run the ball effectively, and that's what I mean by what I was saying. Joe Brady just doesn't feel that way offensively. Cam fits that mold. You know, like, if you want to run the ball, to what y'all were saying, if y'all were talking about running the ball 20-plus, 30-plus times a game, Cam is the quarterback that you need under center to do that, you know, because, again, he takes that pressure off of your running backs. He's that power back that you want. You know what I'm saying? So in me being a Cam fan, I love that about him because, again, we have a decade long of tape to show that, like, look, this is an effective way of how to run this offense. But like you said, he's 32. Like, how long do you expect him to play at that level? And not only that, you know, I love Cam, but we got to see him as a drop back quarterback as well, you know, and I feel like that's honestly in my opinion, that's the biggest problem. You know, the offensive line is bad, and not having a legit answer at quarterback is really hurting us, man. You know, and not saying that I don't believe Cam can be that guy anymore, but we just haven't seen it in so long, man. And going forward, I'm firm with it. I don't believe Joe Brady is the problem, but I think that if Matt Rhule is going to get what he wants with his offense, like at a power run defensive slobber knocker type of team, I feel like that's kind of what you want with Cam, right? You know, 6'6", 240, still can run the ball effectively. You know, he's still, you know, because he with that, and guys, what I will say is, even at 32, he still make a lot of plays running the ball that he's like, man, nobody else is making this play. You know, the very first touch of that he came back in the Carolina Panther uniform, when he took the snap, I was like, oh, bro, this is about to be a loss. Like, on the goal line, a loss of 4 yards. And Cam just pushes a guy off of him and then gets the sideline and, you know, and scores. So, you know, so with that being said, like, I think Cam Newton still has a lot left in the tank, but – and I think what we want to do, or what Matt Rhule wants to do offensively, is fits with the mold of what you do with Cam. I just, I have a lot of questions about how we get there, you know, or how we're going about it, because you can't be a power run offense with the trash off the line, man. You know, you know, when it comes to third down, fourth down, and short, we're terrible when it comes to, you know, to get 1 or 2 yards. And yeah, Cam Newton helps that out, but it, you know, I just, there's a lot of things that Matt Rhule has done with building this team that contradicts itself. You know, like DJ says, it's no way that DJ Moore is one of the most explosive weapons that you have on the team, and you don't have an identity without Christian McCaffrey. It just doesn't make sense. And there's a lot of things that I feel like DJ Moore can do that doesn't help. There's no denying that DJ Moore has not lived up to the expectation that we all may have put on him. But, you know, I feel like we have not done a good job with using our weapons. And part of that is Joe Brady's fault. Part of that is I don't know what Matt Rhule wants, man. You know, like, I believe that he wants to be a power run offense, but nothing about that he's done, you know, in this offseason proves that's the case. Starting with fucking Sam Darnold, like, just to be honest, you know, I just don't know what we're doing, to be honest. So to answer a question about how Cam Newton fits in this offense, well, offense was supposed to be, we're supposed to spread the ball around and get guys involved, and we've yet to do that with three different quarterbacks. So I don't know, man.
Appreciate the super chat, Luke Cage. I'm really excited for the season coming to an end finally. I'm tired of the Panthers for 2021. I mean, you know, as tired as we are, I mean, look at this standings right now. I mean, we're still in that wild card hunt, as bad as we played. So, I mean, coming off the bye week, you know, who knows what can happen. So, I mean, we'll give these guys a chance for a couple more weeks and see if they can make a turnaround. But back to the question about the offense. We talk about the weapons, Monty. I mean, we were excited about Terrace Marshall coming into the season. They signed extended Robbie Anderson this offseason. They drafted Chai Smith. So you're talking about two draft picks on wide receivers and extending Robbie Anderson for 2 years. Does that sound like a team that wants to be a power running team? Why are we adding all these perimeter weapons trying to – with the – expectation of running the ball? You want Robbie Anderson to be a blocker?
Right. Well, and that's the thing, man, is what everything that he says that he wants his team and offense to look like, he's kind of he's what against that. You know, and to me, it goes back to year one when he says he wants to have a tough
you know, a tough brand for a team, and then you let the biggest brand and to me, in my opinion, the toughest guy on the team walk in Cam. You know, everything that Matt Rhule has said that he wants from this team, you know, he's done a good job of doing the opposite. And it don't make sense, man. Starting with, like, to me, in my opinion, we can even go with also extending Robbie Anderson before paying DJ Moore. Now, I love DJ. I mean, I love Robbie Anderson. I think he was a great addition to the team. I don't think that you pay him before you pay your best receiver. But that also goes to the point of, I don't know what the hell we're doing. So when you ask me what I expect or what I see out of this offense, it's hard to say, man, because we do one thing. I want to praise them for one thing, and then we shoot ourselves in another department. So it's hard, man. And don't get me talking on my soapbox. I'll be all day.
Now, according to Matt Rhule, at his interview today, he said that he took a gamble when he brought Joe Brady on board. It's a guy he never had worked with before. He wasn't familiar with the offensive system. So, I mean, you're bringing in a guy, you know, young. He's 31 years old, probably younger than some of the players on the roster. You know, he's had a year or two working with Sean Payton, a year as LSU's passing game coordinator. I think he was at William & Mary. Kev, do you think Rhule made a mistake by showing so much confidence in an unproven offensive coordinator, or do you think it's the right decision in hindsight still?
Yeah, I definitely think that this was the wrong fit from the jump. Again, I think Matt Rhule, like us, just got caught up in the highlights. I mean, you know, when you think about the type of dominance LSU put on in 2019, I mean, we was not the only ones that was interested in Joe Brady, you know, as far as like, you know, getting someone off that LSU offensive staff to see, because, you know, when you're looking at, you know, the passing dynamics, the route concepts, let's give Joe Brady, you know, credit for what he did. Will, you said it several times here. On probably, you know, he can scheme up ways to get wide receivers open, you know, ran different man beater routes when teams played a lot of man against us. When they decided to go zone, when it comes to, you know, passing play design and concepts, Joe Brady knew what he was doing is in far that regard. You know, what Monty just said is about, you know, what Matt Rhule said, he wanted us to be a tough-ass football team. If that's truly what you wanted, then, again, the moves that you made doesn't really, you know, support that. Now, mind you, understand that, you know, coming in, that the cupboard wasn't exactly full for you had to work with, and, you know, you got the 7-year contract, you sold us on, hey, you know, it's going to take 3 years to get this right. I just think that, you know, regardless of what side of the fence you are about, you know, with Cam Newton, you know, getting rid of Cam or not, or whatever. But, you know, once we, you know, let loose of Teddy Bridgewater, who was supposed to be the bridge quarterback, whose contract was set up to be the bridge quarterback, to really just allow us to, one, get out of salary cap hell, dead cap hell rather, and then two, stock up draft picks. Again, you know, when you listen to offseason, you know, what we were sold on, you know, Tepper was talking about maxing out the cap space and you know, stocking up on draft picks and to just really, you know, build this team from the foundation up, you know, like the Pittsburgh Steelers done. But I just think at the end of the day that it just wasn't a good fit. I think that Rhule was trying to be open-minded by allowing Brady this opportunity, thinking that, you know, hey, it's the most prolific offensive attack in the history of college football. It's got to work and have success in the NFL as well. And as you know, the NFL, they catch on quick. It just didn't materialize the way that it should have here with the Panthers. So, I just really think that Matt Rhule done really kind of pigeonholed himself, and this was a move to, quote, buy him time to kind of let that. I don't want to say the seat hot. I'm gonna say it's warm. It's warming up. You know, because I do believe Tepper is patient. To get this done, because like I said, we were sold on year three. I know there's rumors floating around about could Matt Rule's Nets to be let go of. I would just be hard pressed to see Tepper, abandoning this after investing so heavily, with everything that's needed up under Matt Rule, and then gave up draft picks and things like that. The current setup is not really attractive if you're trying to pull anybody else to be the next coach. So I just think that if Matt Rule can really come out after this bye week and just, like I said, give us some sort of identity, whereas fans, that we can see, progress with things as far as like making adjustments after halftime to what other teams adjust to see what we're doing, not being too cute. We can pull out 3-2, potentially maybe 4-1 out of this stretch. That might be enough to give us some momentum heading into the off season here. I'm skeptical for using the playoff word, even though we're still right in the hunt, in the mix. I'm still having nightmares about that 33-10 beatdown in Miami that I went and saw firsthand. That definitely doesn't look like a team that deserves to go to the playoffs that I last saw. So, everything that I need to know about Matt Rule and his team moving forward, I'm going to see this coming Sunday at 1:00 against the Falcons. 40% chance of rain. So, yeah, if you want to establish this run type of attack now, this Sunday would be the perfect opportunity, because the Falcons are they are not a strong run-stopping team coming in. So this would be the perfect game to try to put an identity on this team.
Right. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned some other guys we got rid of. Your favorite one of your favorite players, Alex Armour, let him walk. Chris Manhertz, one of our best blocking tight ends, let him walk. If you want to be a tough running power football team, I mean, those guys were critical. And Christian McCaffrey's 1,000 yard season in 2019, which is probably the last time we were able to establish a consistent run game. So, I mean, yeah, you draft Tommy Tremble, you try to move Giovanni Ricci from tight end to fullback. But, I mean, to me, you had a fullback on the roster that would have, been that lead blocker and did it well. So, just other things he attached to him not doing the things he says he wants to do on paper. Now, JD, we talked a lot about, we talked about the O-line. We talked about the running backs. We touched a lot on DJ Moore. What about these other wide receivers? Robbie Anderson having a significant drop-off from his production last year. Terrace Marshall's been a non-factor. Shai Smith, although he's been hurt a lot, even when healthy, he's been a non-factor. Who do you blame for not being able to get these other wide receivers involved? Is that a Joe Brady issue or more of a quarterback issue to you?
I think a fair amount of it has been quarterback, even for DJs, some of DJ's drops. Placement has been a little off on them. It's hard to say, honestly, because we saw guys like Shai Smith and Terrace Marshall show out during preseason. So it's definitely not something I anticipated to see them like not be a factor at all. Robbie Anderson has just fallen off completely off the map. He's not even a threat anymore. He's just kind of a guy out there that happens to be a wide receiver. And that's unfortunate, because you just extended him, and that's a staunch opposite of what he was last year. Honestly, I want to place some blame on Joe Brady, but I can't do that, because guys like Alex Erickson and Brandon Zylstra coming off the bench, catching balls, getting yak, getting third down conversions, making impact plays on the game. So I want to blame Joe Brady. But I don't know, bro. Your return specialist out here running 15-yard out and getting a first down on third and long. and Alex and Brandon Zylstra getting 45 yards a yak on one play. I don't know, bruh. It's gonna be I'm gonna be hard pressed to place all the blame on Joe Brady. Willie Snead come in and catch a pass and then just dip on out. So I don't. Dang, I want to say it's Joe Brady. I do. I want to use him as a scapegoat. But yeah, your XFL players on the team kind of showing out. So hard for me to say that.
So with Joe Brady on his way out, the interim offensive coordinator will be Jeff Nixon, a guy Matt Rhule played football with. I don't know if he was at Penn State or not. I can check that later. But he's known him since they were young. He's his offensive coordinator at Baylor. So, Monty, with Jeff Nixon, I mean, another guy, no NFL play calling experience. He was, Rhule's offensive coordinator at Baylor. What's your realistic expectations on how the offense is going to look different under Jeff Nixon versus Joe Brady in the first 12 games?
Realistic expectations. Gosh, I don't know if you can say you really know what to expect if we're being realistic. I don't, again, we could say, well, look at his success that he had in college, but I don't know if you can use that and bank or base that on anything that we have over the next five games. Realistically, what I'm hoping or what I hope to expect to see is that we get Cam more involved in the run game. I hope that. The run game is a focal point of what we're trying to do. And I think, and I hope that they focus or run the offense through DJ Moore. I think that's a perfect start to whatever you're trying to do offensively, what I think that Matt Rhule is going to have to bank on is his defense showing up for the next five games. And that's really realistically what I'm expecting, man. Cause I don't know how much better or how much Cam can learn the offense and even with the week off, like you're essentially talking about learning the complete different offense now, so again, we're all there. You're expecting your complete offense to be, on the fly, learn something, maybe not completely different, but a different style of offense that what Joe Brady was running. So what I expect, I can lie and tell you that I expect us to go out there and play smash mouth football, but I just don't know, man. I think that, I think what Kev said is right. Like, Atlanta is the perfect game to get right. I think Atlanta is the perfect game where if you want to come out, show to prove to your fan base, to prove to your team that you're a serious coach and a serious team, go out there and sweep a rival that you haven't swept and beat in Atlanta in gosh forever, or you haven't had a much success in Atlanta in a long time. I think that's the start. Past that, I want to see them like smart football, I don't want to see Cam out there playing hero ball. And gosh, if we're going to see something, I want to see Deonte Brown and Christian Brady Christian play as well. I think that's what we're drafted him for over the last five games. Again, if you're talking about gambling your career as a head coach, I feel like, you got to go out smoking the way that you came in, go out with the guys that you brought. So, if Brady Christensen was a offensive tackle, like a third round offensive tackle on your board, bro, play him, at this point, he can't be any worse than Dennis Daly. I think that's just fact. He can't be any worse than that. And Deonte Brown, I feel like, you brought him in. You were high on him when drafting him. And I feel like the better way of rewarding him for getting down and weight and getting in shape is, play him. Or at least see how it's, get him on a snap count and let's see how he looks. The next five games is going to be crucial to, Matt Rhule's career and what this team – what to expect, I feel like, going into 2022. Winning three games out of the next five would Kev said, would be huge, man. I think that would give us the boost that we need or that, in my opinion, the confidence that we need that Matt Rhule isn't just a wash at head coach. Because right now, that's what it feels like. That's what it looks like. And I think giving him 3 years is only fair. But let you not win at least two to three games over this next five. Let us win one or lose out. And, bro, it's going to be mayhem in Carolina, bro.
Now, Kev, knowing Matt Rhule, do you think Jeff Nixon has an opportunity to be the offensive coordinator beyond these next five games, or do you think he learns from his mistakes and maybe gets a more experienced offensive coordinator, possibly that's been an NFL head coach before?
I think Matt Rhule will allow the opportunity. If you read the article, and again, it just depends on how much you want to take Matt Rhule at his word. We've all had fun of, you know, dissecting, you know, the truth and validity of what, you know, Matt Rhule comes out of his mouth. So, you know, kind of have to take it as a grain of salt. But I think the opportunity is there if we get the results. Like I said, if we go 3-2, possibly 4-1, I don't want to be sounding crazy and talking about win the last five right games. But, I definitely see – I think I see why he wanted to trust – trust him to call the plays, because if you look at our remaining opponents that's left, you know, Falcons, Buffalo, things of that nature, there are some opportunities that with this mind frame that could be there. Now, I'm not saying go out there and, you know, be like wishbone attack or, you know, anything like that, but I just see this as a chance that, I just see this as a chance to, you know, buy, you know, Matt Rhule more time than anything to get to this year three, which is what he's pretty much been based upon, which pretty much what we were sold on by him or by Tepper is this infamous year three. If we're able to, and, you know, as we're talking right now, I'm looking over, I'm seeing, you know, this Buffalo defense being ran through right now at the moment. who we play after Atlanta. So again, I see opportunities for this. You know, if we come out just by, you know, playing and executing our blocks on a level that can produce the results, I think this will be a good opportunity for him to possibly maintain his position beyond this interim basis.
Now, JD, I know you watch a lot of college football. If you rewind back to 2019 Baylor, how much of that offense do you remember? Since Jeff Nixon was calling plays for that team. They went to the Sugar Bowl. Remember, they lost to Georgia. They lost to Oklahoma twice. But other than that, they I think they finished with a 10-3 record, I want to say. Is there anything that stood out to you about Jeff Nixon's offense?
Not too much in particular. I remember them using a lot of their running backs in the past game and leaning on, I think it's Jamichael Hasty. Honestly, I can't say, because most of Rhule's teams, if you look back down through his resume here, most of his teams have been defensive-minded teams. Most of his players, NFL players, players of his that went to the next level, outside of obviously PJ Walker, a couple of Baylor guys, obviously Robbie Anderson, have been defensive players. Hassan Reddick, all these guys, first round talents. Temple Tough was not because of their offense, it was because of their defense, straight up. So I don't know what quite to expect here of their guys. They did have Denzel Mims. So possibly we see a little bit more vertical, a little bit more shots taken. Honestly, I can't lie to you. I don't remember. I think it was Charlie Brewer. I don't remember those guys like that. But yeah, I need to see some. They have to be aggressive, straight up. Whether that's passing, power running, it doesn't matter. You just got to come out aggressive. There's nothing to lose. Like, nobody finds the offensive identity by playing passive. And you're not gonna be the guy next year if you're just coming out here and doing preseason stuff, ball control, clock management. You're gonna have to show them that you can get this offense an identity. And I think how you do that, well, Baylor has been in the past a vertical scheme. You've seen guys that stretch the field come from there. KD Cannon, again, Denzel Mims. You see all these speedy wideouts. And our wideout room kind of looks a lot like those guys. Got several of those guys that can stretch the field. Terrace Marshall, Shai Smith, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore. So you're going to have to come out and let this thing fly. Because, look, if we wanted a ball control identity, we were almost already pretty much there. If you want to get there, it's the 30 carries a game rule was talking about. I don't think that's what he wants. I think he wants an explosive offense to be able to take advantage of a stingy defense. So it's gonna be a sight to see. I think that's gonna be the thing to watch for these next five games. Can this offense lean on its athletes? Can it find an identity? If the offense finds an identity and the defense stop being frauds, then we're gonna be in a good spot come next year. Because I'm not gonna talk about playoffs with this team.
All right, so let's look ahead a little bit. I guess with these five games left, I mean, Cam Newton was named the starter, at least for this week. He said he was thinking about playing P.J. Walker a little bit. Last week he said Sam Darnold's back to practicing again. I don't think anybody really wants to see him back on the field ever again. So, Monty, how would you move forward with the quarterback situation going into this offseason? We know Sam Darnold's going to get paid his $18 million no matter what happens. You try to trade him and find a sucker to take it, maybe pay some of his salary to just get rid of him. You extend Cam Newton 1 to 2 years. PJ's a free agent as well. How are you handling it this offseason?
Well, first, I really do think you got to play the last five games out. I think you got to see how the last five games play. I think you got to see how Cam looks. You know, as much as I love Cam, like you said, I think I'm the biggest Cam fan in the group. And I honestly believe you have to see how he looks over the last 5 weeks. Moving to the offseason, yeah, you have to find somebody that will trade for Sam Darnold. And if you don't, Cam is your QB1, Sam Darnold and PJ Walker are battling out for QB2. And that's who you roll with for a year. I don't see you drafting a quarterback unless one just absolutely falls to you either in the second or you trade back and one that you really like falls to you late in the first. I don't see that taking a quarterback. It wouldn't make sense in my opinion, especially with having with Sam Darnold, you're paying him $18 or $19 million. And you got Cam Newton hanging in the limbo, especially if Cam plays well the next five games. Like, if Cam plays well the next five games, I think it's a no-brainer. You have to extend him for at least two seasons. You get, you know, extend him. Trade back, get as much draft capital as you can get in day two. And then 2022, draft your quarterback. You know, there's going to be a few good quarterbacks coming out that year. I feel like for Bryce Young, you know, Stroud from Ohio State, I think those are two quarterbacks that I think that you, depending on what you do this offseason, depending on how you get, you know, to regain this draft capital, you can actually trade up to get one of them depending on how we do. So, these next five games, I think Cam hit it, I mean, with Kev hit it on the head. Is you gonna learn all that you need to know about Matt Rhule, you know? Because if we finish out strong, if he can pull and channel his best Ron Rivera and finish 3-2, 4-1, and again, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if he can do that, I think, and Cam Newton plays well, I think that we look at this season a lot differently than what, I mean, because let's not forget we started the year 3-1, 3-0. And I feel like at that point, even though it was still early in the season, I feel like at that point we kind of felt like we were going to turn the corner as a team. And then the bottom fell out again. And we've just kind of teeter-tottered around 500. And if we can just win 8 to 9 games, you might sneak in the playoffs and then anything can happen. So, you know, again, the next five games are going to tell a lot about this coaching staff, a lot about this team, you know, and I'm excited to see it. I'm nervous to see it, but ask me what this QB room going to look like in another month or two, you know, so then I'll give you a better answer.
All right, well, I think we pretty much covered everything about the, you know, Joe Brady firing and what's next. Before we close out for today, we'll talk a little bit about this Falcons game. Like I said earlier in the podcast, we've already done a breakdown of the Atlanta Falcons offense and defense. If you want to get more detail on that, just look at the earlier podcast episode. But for now, we'll just do a quick preview of this game coming up. Kev, what do you think the keys to victory are this weekend? And also give me a prediction, and then we're going to go to Monty and then JD.
Yeah, well, the keys for me are pretty much going to be day one fundamentals. Number one, less three penalties or less. You know, can we start there? We're leading the team. We're leading the league in penalties. I know that may be asking for a lot, but three penalties or less would be a good start. No more turnovers. I think we've beaten ourselves way more than our opponents have. You know, with the gift given that we've. With the gift giving that we've done. And, you know, so we can start off by doing those two things against this particular Atlanta Falcons team. I think that that'll definitely put us in a position to have a chance to really be able to do some things, particularly, you know, when you look at this last pass game with the Falcons, I think they played the Bucks. I think it was They had it competitive for a good part of the game, to be honest, and then it just kind of, you know, got away from them towards the end, even as short-handed as they were. So again, it's a divisional rival, you know, records and everything go out the window. We haven't swept these guys since the 2014 season. It's long overdue. I'm ready to shut them guys, you know, send the hell up. You know, about that, because, you know, when you look at the all-time records, we could sweep these guys the next 5-6 seasons and they still hold the all-time, you know, win-loss record against us. So to be able to sweep the Falcons would give me a joy that I can enjoy for quite a while. But overall, as far as the scoring prediction here, all right, it's going to be a rainy game, so I'm kind of going to teeter on the low scoring side. But I'm going to say something along the lines of, I'm going to say Carolina 24, Atlanta 16.
Okay,
my all right, is my go? My bad.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we're I'm probably agreeing almost 100% with KF. One for me, I think the number one thing I think we got to do is stop and run, like all out. Like I feel like Cordell Peterson is a scary running back that I feel like that could get off on us, and especially over the last couple of weeks, we've had holes and had problems stopping the run. So I feel like that's going to have to be number one. And, I feel like just no penalties, you know, or limited penalties and limited turnovers, I think that we got a good chance of chipping them. I'm with Kev. It's long overdue that we sweep these boys, man. It's been a long time. Gosh, I didn't know it was that long since it was 2014. So, yeah, man, it's been a while since we, like, swept Atlanta and done it in Carolina fashion. So I would love to go out there, especially with Cam back. You know, I would love to go out there and go out there and get a good win. I want to see DJ have another good game. You know, he had a quiet garbage time 100-yard game last week or two weeks ago now. So it was like I want DJ to go out there and have a good game. And if I'm having to make a score prediction, I'm going to say 24 Carolina, 21 Atlanta. I think Zane going to put the team on his back and win it for us. So, yeah.
I hate having to put on this negative Nancy hat, and I don't enjoy it. We've been talking
about it. You don't have to.
No.
You don't. You don't have to.
I'm going to do it anyway.
Mute his mic.
Y'all going to get mad at me, but look, I'm just going to tell you how I see it. We've been talking a lot about the offense today, and I think this game is more important for the defense. And I sat here and I thought to myself, are they going to be able to do their job against the Falcons? And my inner, the innermost part of my being said, hell no. So I think this defense is fraudulent. I don't think they're built for a playoff run. I don't think they're a playoff defense. I've said it since before they started proving me right. So I'm going to stay on that boat, and I'm going to call it Falcons 24, Carolina 9. Zane Gonzalez is going to give us all our points.
Of all the people on the roster you're going to blame, you're going to blame the number two defense in the league that's probably had two bad games on the year.
Boy, the GOAT, look, let me explain to you why I said that. And I know chat going to get mad at me, but guess what? I got the mic, so y'all going to have to listen to me. this guy on the Falcons deep offense named Cordarrelle Patterson, and he the reason why I'm not winless in fantasy. So I think he's gonna get off, bro. I honestly do, and I hope the defense prove me wrong, but I don't know if they will.
Hey, Cordarrelle Patterson is a problem. So it's like that again. That's what I'm saying, like, we got to sell out to stop him, but. Bro, 24-9 is an issue for me, bro. I don't think we're gonna be that bad. At least I pray we don't be that bad. Like, I've seen terrible football from Carolina the last 3 weeks, but damn, JD, it hurt, bro.
Yeah. We just lost to the Dolphins with one of the worst offensive lines in the league, bro.
I mean, Miami was on a four-game winning streak. Atlanta is not a good football team at all. I mean, we talk about how bad we've been. I mean, they've been equally as bad throughout the year.
I guess that's fair, but I don't trust the defense at all. I think they're gonna sell us.
Well, stay tuned, because if the Panthers win, we're gonna have a live roast session on JD and his prediction. We're gonna let Monty lead the way, because you know Monty's one of the best roasters I came across in a long time. So you know I know what I see in the chat from you guys.
Oh, bro,
so.
You know I'm on his top, bro. I'm on his top. Let us win big.
All right. Look, I ain't got no problem with that. I'll turn my mic on. My cam on. I ain't scared of y'all. Especially his Mr. Magoo looking stuff. I ain't scared of none of y'all.
Well, you predicted a score of 24-9 and said you're worried about the defense when you only have an offense or a 9?
Look, that ain't nothing new, though. That ain't changed.
Hey, we it's all right, bro. We've been trash on bro. I'm on his top. That's right. This league, like I said, we're going to let the game play Sunday, because it was like, we've been trash, but I just don't think we're that trash.
Oh, we trash, beloved. We garbage.
All right, y'all. We're going on 1 hour and 8 minutes. We're going to wrap it up in a bit here. Y'all got any final comments you want to say to everybody that's listening tonight before we wrap it up?
You know, I always want to thank each one of our fans, let them know we appreciate them supporting the Four-Man Rush, supporting us on our different social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, downloading and listening to our podcast again. Just want to also make sure we let you fans know that we do not take that for granted. And we definitely appreciate you guys hitting us up in our inboxes, asking questions, things of that nature. So, you know, forgive us if it take a little while for us to get back sometimes, but we definitely appreciate the love and support. I ain't trying to go with JD saying damn all that. Like I said, we to have a whole bye week off and to come out back at home to a 24-9. Monty, I want you on his top, bottom, neck. I want it all. Like I ain't gonna say nothing. I'm just gonna let you do all the dirty work for us, Monty, when we get this dub, man. Because you know JD then went on the Benedict honor route with us, man.
Oh, I'm cooking Cousin Skeeter. Like, don't worry about that. I'm cooking Cousin Skeeter. Don't worry. So believe that. So you don't worry about that. Last comments, man. Hey, man, I hope everybody has a blessed week for the rest of the week. Dog, I just want to win, man. That's all I want. I don't – look, excuse me, we can win by a point. and I'm happy. You like that's how serious I am with it. I like just go out there. I need a clean game. I need guys to come out healthy. I need our defense to stand tall, man, and let's just go out there and get a dub, man. That's all I need from the Panthers this week. That's all I need, man.
I feel like y'all traumatized on the panel, because it's almost like y'all keep bringing the ex back after they apologize and say they sorry. The last game we played was not the first time this defense looks off. I'm gonna keep it a butt with you, and I don't know how many times it's got to happen for y'all to realize that these boys just not good. So, with that being said, hopefully they proved me wrong and they look good, and I'll be here to take that. I eat my crow. I like my crow season. So we're gonna see. Y'all gonna get Quincy AC to try to roast me, but it's all right. I'm not going quiet. I got some shells too, so we're gonna see how it go, and hopefully we get a dub and get on the right track, because it's gonna be ugly if we come out flat out of the bye week. But that's what I'm thinking is gonna happen, unfortunately.
No, we're not gonna feed you crow. We're gonna feed you fried falcon after this game, so you're ready for that full plate of that season and everything.
Boy, look, I like my falcon bait.
All right, man. Appreciate everybody for listening tonight. If you want to hear, if you might have missed it or came on late, it'll be up on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Omni. Shout out to Cat Cray for putting our podcast on their website. So you can also find it there as well. Games at 1 p.m., home game next Sunday. Bring your umbrellas, your ponchos, sweaters. It's going to be cold and rainy this Sunday. Get out and support your team. For opportunity to see Cam Newton back in a Panthers uniform should always be a fun experience for you and your family. So let's see if we can, reverse this trend and get a W. So again, thank you everybody for listening tonight. Peep us Sunday after the game. We're going to do the post-game show. Get that on board again. See you guys on Sunday. Keep pounding.